You ready? It is the start of,
I'd say football
season, but just sports season in general. I feel like the football season is probably the start of like all the sports, because we watch quite a lot of sports.
Yeah, I'd say the only one that sort of doesn't run from, like, isn't a winter sport, doesn't run from like September-ish through to like sort of April, May, is probably baseball and cricket, but we don't really watch baseball.
I'm
the only person we know that watches cricket.
Well, cricket's like an all-year-round sport, isn't it? Baseball's like a spring sport, for whatever reason. But that's American, we're English, we've got our... British now, because he's got his Mayo jacket.
We ain't got no Irish listeners. They would get well upset with that comment.
Apologies. Well, the thing is, I've got a Mayo jacket myself, so there you go, innit? My grandmother was Irish, innit? So,
I do think one day we should just cut about in Islington and both wearing Mayo tops.
When I wear Mayo tops, that's when the Irish people accept me for being Irish.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
That's a good thing about it. It's not like they go, oh, fuck, you're not from here. You can fuck off, you black so-and-so. Do you know what I mean?
They don't tend to be... That was just some sort of commotion out.
I was going
to
say, is that another car crash outside your front door?
Maybe we should tell that story first before we introduce the podcast and sort of like explain what we're doing.
So we're
doing a podcast. It's not a sports podcast.
Sunny Chesant. We are in the wonderful and sunny Chesant.
We're in my living room. It's not a sports podcast. It's just me and you shooting the breeze about a load of different things.
Well, that's the thing. I think because this hopefully maybe will be our first episode we release. We don't want it to be a sports podcast, but we are into sports.
And it's what I want to talk about today.
We'll also talk about a lot of other things we're into.
Like life, growing up, growing old, entering middle age, gloriously leaving our 20s and entering our 30s, which...
Well, hopefully it'll be a lot of intersection. I mean, I do tend to spread a lot around different things. And, you know, we'll be talking about life and then shit.
Definitely.
And, giggles and all of that bullshit, but I guess like for me, because at the start of the week, and I don't know how we'll go with this, but one thing we said we're gonna do is we're gonna, because everyone likes to rank stuff, so after this we'll do about 45 minutes of just straight up chatting, and then we are going to rank off our most overrated, I guess, takeaways slash
and anywhere you can eat from.
Well, not like a fucking fancy restaurant.
No, but anywhere that people that listening, no matter where you're from, will know or be able to Google and find out what it is. So, I've got a couple. I've got it on my phone. I've got one that isn't as big here, but is big in another country. But
for our international listeners,
Buenos Dias. Buenos Dias. But everyone would have heard of this place, but people might not have eaten there. But let me do...
What, you talking about your mum?
Let me do the car crash quickly before we go.
Yeah.
So last Friday, I decided to log on to my work laptop, working from home. Logged on nice and early, made my coffee. It's probably 7:30, meaning I can log off a little bit early because I had some stuff to do. The day's going great. I've got my coffee. The dog's been outside and done what she needs to do. I'm typing away and I've heard a massive commotion outside. Like, and I'm talking massive, like, not like a, not, it was like a skid and then sounded like a bomb going off. I thought, what's that?
Not like a mini commotion in, say, like, McDonald's if you order.
Yeah. We're talking.
Not like World Star Hip Hop.
No, I don't even know what that is, but nah.
No, it's a black thing.
A massive commotion. I've looked outside and somebody has driven, my car's parked along the side of a road and someone has driven
ideal.
Inside. Yeah, exactly where you'd want to park a car.
At the side of the road, yep.
And, I mean, it's not in a bay or anything. It's up against the curb. Someone has come around the corner and driven into the side of my car at about 60 miles an hour. He's then got off on crutches with a beer in his hand and tried to run off down the road.
Quarter to eight in the morning.
This is Chesant.
This is Chesant.
Chris has some really interesting opinions about Chesant, which I love. And we'll go into that later, but... This is not even shocking for Chesant, but he's uninsured.
In your opinion?
Yeah, he's uninsured, he's drunk, and it weren't his car. So that's basically left me.
And your car got written off, basically, so you're without a vehicle. In the middle of the city.
In the
6, because this is not London.
This isn't even Zone 5. This is further out than Zone 5. This is National Rail area. But yeah, so that's...
This is sheep shagging.
I won't go that far. This is partly why we're here today and not somewhere else, because I have no transport. I can't get anywhere.
Well, also, you know, sometimes I've got to make the effort to come up your way. Do you know what I mean?
I'd say in the 5 years I've lived here, I'd say you average probably once every 2 or 3 months, which is decent considering there's not that much to do here.
But also, like, we hang out as a group, and most of the people are around my way,
yeah,
to be fair.
Yeah, that's true. And also, most of my mates are quite good at, like, I'd say, the people I see regularly, most of them come up here probably once.
I come up enough. Yeah, good. You can only come here a few times. Yeah. Shit-hole.
It is, it's a nice shit-hole, isn't it?
Like, it's lovely. The thing I say about Chesant is that, because I live in Islington, right? And, you know, a lot of people think Islington's really, like, affluent and rich and stuff. And it is in some places, but not where I'm from, because there's a good mixture of, like, affluence and rich and yummy mummies and all that nastiness. And then you've got, like, the shit-hole, right? You've got people that are just, like, crackheads and just wrong-uns and whatnot. Now, Chesant is full of that. They have no affluence. Yeah. Well, they got no success.
You know what it is? People talk about Islington elite because, like, Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings and stuff live there. But they're actually talking about, like, probably half a square mile in Angel when they talk about Islington elite. And then they're talking about probably another half a square mile.
Gwyneth Paltrow lived there.
Again, in that area. 60% of Islington is just normal. Like, or sort of,
well, like, I mean, relatively normal. Like, yeah, with crazy people.
And then probably the other 40% has been lost to the middle classes forever.
Yeah, and the problem is that some of these poor people think they're middle class and then they don't know how to act.
Yeah.
And then they become non-binary.
I work for a much more liberal institution than you do, so I'm not gonna comment on that. But basically, yeah, Chesant, to close on that, so it's a normal place on the outskirts of London that is just quite working class. There's a few shit-hole pubs and a lot of takeaways and nothing else. But
And the thing is, it's safe as anything. Do you know what I mean? It's just people just on a different class system, jokes aside.
Yeah, exactly.
But my people, to be fair, more close to me.
Oh, 100%. You're more comfortable here than you are. I could take you down to the Maltzers, plug for my local pub. I could take you down to the Maltzers and you'll be a lot more comfortable than if I took you to some wine bar in Upper Street. Like, 100%. And the same goes for most of my mates, to be fair.
Yeah, that's why we are who we are. That's why we wear football tops on holiday and in this
very league. True. Right, should we crack on?
Well, we had a big, big morning talking about football, sports and stuff. Because, look, I've got my Arsenal top on. Rory is a previous Arsenal fan. I guess you're an Arsenal fan. And also, I don't know how if we'll interlace it, but we was talking earlier on in the week about Johnny Football, the Johnny Manziel Untold
documentary.
It's not, well, it's part of a series, but it's like an hour long. On Netflix, and how he's like a rich kid and all that sort of stuff. So I just think it's hard with sports these days because it's getting more and more kind of commercialized, capitalized, probably run by people that aren't part of the sport. But the game is still the game. And that's one of the things I always try to say with you. And I know you've got like a long history of being an Arsenal fan and seeing...
Not even just a football fan. Like, I just love football. Like, I grew up around football. I played football since I was a kid. I love football. But I've never felt more...
And the thing is, I probably grill you a lot about your opinion on football. But I don't know anyone that loves football more than you do, really. All round. You played it at a decent level. Played at uni. You've had season tickets in your family for years and years. And you know you're in a group now where we chat shit about it, and we are probably like first generation fans.
Yeah, I wouldn't say first generation fans. That's a bit harsh.
I am. I mean, I grew up with a single mum. My mum's got no interest in football. She's not really no interest in any of it, really. Just about me.
But I mean, we have got friends who are not, who have like a, you know, their dad supports the team, and like, funnily enough, I don't support the same team as my dad, which is like. So,
but you never really grew up.
My mum and dad split up when I was like 15. But my dad was one of them generations. He had me really late.
But he was
Irish.
He came over here.
His sport was he was of that generation where he first came over here in the 60s, where you would go to. And my great granddad apparently was like this as well. They'd go Arsenal one week and Spurs the next. Like that, yeah, that was normal. Yeah.
Would they change tops?
No, they wouldn't have tops. Like in the 60s and 70s, no one wore a shirt. Like that's like a 90s thing. That's why you can never really find football shirts replica that are, unless they're remakes that are like pre 1990.
Yeah, I guess.
But they would go. Actually, my old boss is a massive Spurs fan, and he gets it from his mum's side as well. And he was telling me that his nan used to do that. His nan used to go Tottenham one week, Arsenal the next week. Because
imagine that.
It's crazy. And
I could see maybe if you did it like another team, but you're literally
And people would do it in East London. They'd go Orient one week and West Ham the next week.
It's the closest team.
You could get into pretty much any ground for sort of like the equivalent of about £3.
Three tuppence.
Yeah, threepence. And there was, but there was
one guinea and two.
Yeah, so my old man would go when he first came over. He would go because he was from South London. He moved to South London. He would go to Palace one week. He'd go to Millwall the next week. He'd go to Chelsea because my uncle played for Chelsea back in the whenever Chelsea first won the league. Alan Dix, look him up. He was Bristol City manager and he played for Chelsea. So when he was playing for Chelsea, my dad would go and watch Chelsea. And it was more, I guess you'd probably say that my dad was a Millwall or a Palace fan, but he's not. But he would just go, he just liked watching football. Like when I was growing up, if I weren't going to Arsenal with my mum, because it's all my mum's side that are mad Arsenal fans. If I wasn't going to Arsenal with my mum, my dad would take me. I can remember going, Brentford used to do this thing where if an adult paid full price, so £15 or whatever, and you had a kid with you, the kid got in for a quid. So my old man would drag me from Enfield all the way into King's Cross. We'd then change and go all the way out to Brentford. And I remember once we went to watch like Brentford against Wrexham, and it was like the coldest I've ever been at a football match. But just because I love football so much, and he knew, how can I keep him occupied for an afternoon in the winter? I'll take him to football. So we'd go to Barnet, we'd go to Orient, we'd go to Wrexham, we'd go.
Would he just get hammered?
No, he wouldn't actually. He wouldn't. No. He's not. My old man was a social drinker. Like he would, when he was taking me out, he might get hammered when we got back. But he was like a, he would just basically be like, what can I do with this kid to keep him occupied for an afternoon? Me being like 13, 14. And he'd just take me. We used to go to Millwall quite a bit. We used to go to Brentford. We used to go to Orient. Just every Watford I've been to. Like I've been to every ground in London, other than QPR.
But then is that why? Like because I sort of, I guess I would have started watching football properly when I was like early teenager. Like football's always been around, and I grew up in a heavy Arsenal area. But you know, it wasn't in my family. My mum's a single mum. My brothers weren't really interested in football. I got in football later on in life because that's what like your mates would do. So it wasn't something that I inherited. It was something that. And then Arsenal was my local team. I had a family friend who was a big Arsenal fan. Never really went to games. But like, I feel like sometimes you don't really have an appreciation for the worldwide scope of football.
Well, that's why I want to take you to. I want to take you to an Exeter game. I think you will. So my older brother lives in. Lives in Devon, local team's Exeter, goes every week. So he's been down there probably about 12, 15 years now. He's now got a season ticket at Exeter. He goes every week. And just, I went to Exeter against Accrington in March, and it was the most I've enjoyed a football experience.
Why?
Because
is it better than going to the Arsenal?
It's just so different. And it's the equivalent of like, it's really hard to liken it to something. You know, like, we could go... No, it was quite... Because Exeter is a university city. It's not as diverse as Arsenal, but it was quite a diverse crowd. Just because it's nice to see a community come together and support their local team. And there's a good crowd there. And the atmosphere... Exeter's got the largest freestanding terrace in British football now. So if they call it...
I just hate standing.
No, trust me. Once you've stood at football, you'll never want to go back to sitting.
I don't think you really appreciate how hard standing is for me. I'm a big guy, lower back issues. Knees.
Played rugby a lot though, so you must have been.
Do you know what I mean? I'm an athlete.
Must have been in good nick once upon a time.
You think? Well, that's what I'm saying. My body's beating up, and look at me.
It was so nice. Like there. So on the big bag, it's you could probably hold about 3,000 in there. So imagine a terrace with a roof and 3,000 people packed underneath it.
Yeah.
And there's like the Larry kids at the back are all sort of like 15 to 23, and then we sat sort of like down to the left. And like, I'm not a big shouter or singer at football. I'll sing in the pub after 8 pints afterwards, but I like to actually watch the game. But seeing the kids at the back, all mates from school and college and whatever, enjoying themselves at the back, seeing the old moany blokes, you know, first misplaced pass at the front, it's It's just nice to see a community come together and back their local team. And bear in mind, Exeter is a team that punches well above their weight as well. For them, for a city of that size to be getting 6,000-7,000 at every home game and be up the top of League One is massive for a club of that size.
And they do massive.
They do massive in rugby.
They were winning in Premier League years.
Yeah. And it's just, it was just, I just enjoyed it. I enjoyed being able to park like a 5-10 minute walk away from the stadium and then walk in. I enjoy as well being able to watch like Kevin McDonald, who was a Fulham player for years. So being able to watch a player who's probably played 120 Premier League games, who's now like 37, trudging his way through a League One game, but also when he got the ball, clearly being the best player on the pitch, just not being able to run. This season they've got Tom Carroll, who came through at Spurs at the same time as Harry Kane. And I'm looking forward to the next time I go down there, watching him. It's just... You'll know when we go, but it's the equivalent of like if we went to a really nice Michelin star restaurant like a Gordon Ramsay gaff and paid 150 quid each, and we both took our misses and we sat down and we had the nice wine and we really enjoyed it. It's a nice meal, but you come out and think, fuck it hell, that was like, I'm a bit like the time we went to that sushi place in Covent Garden. And you come out and you're like, yeah, it was a nice night, but we're 300 quid down here.
Like you couldn't do it.
And then this morning, we ordered from the local cafe and it was banging. And it's that sort of experience.
But I think that's kind of like a good analogy, because the thing I was going to say next is like, Exeter go in there to some of these sort of lower league clubs, maybe like an Orient at a time, Millwall, whatever. They'll probably be good from a week to week basis. But the thing that you get from a big club is that you'll have those massive nights in Europe potentially.
One of the first things I said, because my brother, like, he's an anorak, he likes to get the program, check the team sheet, get on the terrace, first ones on there. And I remember
an anorak in anime.
Yeah, and I remember as the terrace was filling up, I said to him, because they'd been in the playoffs a couple of years before, I was like, home leg of the playoffs on a Tuesday night under the lights in April. I was like, what was it like? And he was like, honestly, mate, he was like, the atmosphere around the whole city all day is like second leg of the playoff, one game from Wembley. Because they got to the playoffs, I think, 3 years in a row. And I was like, was it good? He was like, incredible. So for a city like that to get their day.
Bearing in mind, though, this is a Duffy, and Duffy's
they do.
Right? Like, I want everyone to hear this.
Duffy's do exaggerate. But I mean, I can imagine that the atmosphere for...
Rory will go to a cafe and get a bacon sandwich and say that's the best meal he's ever had.
I will, but at the time, it probably is.
Like, it probably is at the time.
But yeah, it's different, isn't it? Like, I'm really... We was talking earlier. I'm really looking forward to the Champions League nights at Arsenal. I'm really looking forward.
Yeah, that's what's so good about having it back.
The thing with top-level football now is it feels so disconnected from the game that's played. You know, a quick anecdote. I was going to say a story. Stan Bowles, have you ever heard of him?
No.
So he was like a legendary player in the 70s. And at the end of his career...
Am I going to know?
Legendary, though. Like, he played for QPR when they...
My family got it 4 years ago.
He played for QPR when they were at the very top of what is now the Premier League. Like, he was like a superstar, but he was known for being a drinker and a gambler. Towards the end of his career, he went to Orient. And I remember old blokes telling me that he'd be like 35, 36 playing for Orient, and an hour before kickoff, you'd find him in the Ladbrokes on Leighton High Road, literally putting his bets on. And you just don't get players like that anymore, which is probably a good thing for the professionalism, but they're so disconnected. I think it's why people like Harry Kane, because Harry Kane is pretty much just a normal guy who happens to be outrageous at football. Whereas,
yeah, bare you look at he's just like this normal, ugly-looking, ugly-sounding bloke. He seems to be one of the best like hitters of a football of his generation.
You look at Neymar, and he's knocking about with P. Diddy in Miami, and he's like even Beckham's gone and bought himself an MLS team. Like, these players of the last sort of 15, 20 years, they seem so disconnected from what...
But do you think it's hard? Because I think one of the things that don't get talked about a lot is the actual football is better.
Yeah.
Do you mean the athletes are better? But as a fan, I guess you don't necessarily appreciate as much, because all you're really in it for is the experience, the winning, the losses. It's like, fair enough. Like, these players can commit themselves to eating right, exercising right, not being connected to the club, just focusing and being like self-serving. But then as a fan, you don't feel that connection to your... It's why when you approach a team like that, or a player rather, that comes into your side and they're just bare effort. They will put their life on the line for that team. They may not be the best, but fans will always grab
100%. That's why you look at cult heroes.
And then you can have a player. And then you can have a player who's like, yeah, because that's why like Jack Grealish, for instance, is so big for Man City, because he's almost like a bit of a throwback. Do you know what I mean? He's a quality player and he's good enough to play on that level. But on the outside, he's a lad and he's someone that you can relate to.
Exactly. And like, I couldn't agree more. Like the game in terms of the product is much better, but also it doesn't necessarily mean they're technically better players than they were 20 years ago. It just means that they don't have to, you know, you look at Maradona, the pitches he had to play on, it was like a ploughed field. Yeah. The pitches are perfect. They have like cryogenic chambers where they get into now and they freeze themselves to like 120 degrees and you know, and it helps for 3 seconds and like to help their muscles. Like, you know, the players are better athletes now. The technology's improved. The pitches have improved. They understand more now about like nutrition and about diet and stuff like that. But ultimately, the players are more disconnected from the man in the street than they've ever been. And I don't know if the two things are linked.
I don't know. Well, because you think when you say players like Maradona, you talk about like Zidane, those sorts of players. If you're going to measure the best players now to those ones, maybe you can make an argument that they are players that they're not more technical, better skilled players than that. The difference is now there are more Maradonas and Zidanes. There are more players that are technically much better. It's like there are less outliers. You've got to be an outlier amongst outliers now, whereas before the best player was the, you know, was the outlier. That's why they were probably revered more amongst
But also I think I do agree with what you're saying to a point, but also I think there's a flip side of it where the players now, you can, being a good athlete takes you a lot further than it did maybe 20 years ago. Like there are players now that are just pure athletes.
You won't be able to keep up with the pace of play, because the thing is, right, we didn't play sports at a high level, right? But you know, I played rugby for years and I played for a club that had like 5 teams and I worked my way up. Right, and the thing that really got me there was just straight up fitness and athleticism. It was because I had a good enough ability. Like I remember, like I'd be training with some of these guys, and I'm like, how is it that I'm not getting in the second team or third team? I am a much better player than technically better. I understand how to play the game better. But the thing that I didn't have was the physical element.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If I gave you an extra 4 inches. Yeah, chance to be a fine thing. If you could have an extra 4 inches in height,
upwards.
Yeah, if you could have an extra 4 inches in height, and you'd been playing, you played rugby from what age? 19, 20?
About 18, 19.
If you started playing rugby when you were 12, 13,
oh.
In terms of your actual ball handling, and I'd have given you an extra 3 or 4 inches in height, that would have probably been enough to push you from a second team player up to a first team player, and maybe even to like a county standard.
Well, not even bigging myself up, but like. Technically, I think that for my position, I played front row hooker, you know,
which are the big dogs for anyone who's not a rugby fan. The big uglies, as they call them.
Exactly, they're the big fat ones, the lumps. They're the ones that pretty much just catch the ball, put your head down, run it into players, reset and go. Right? I thought myself as a bit of a flair player. Right? I'd be getting colourful boots, rolling my socks down to my ankles. You only do that.
Yeah, that's true.
And I could spin a pass. Like I could spin a pass when I played tag rugby. I was excellent because I could pass the ball.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. If I was just a few more inches, maybe a bit quicker and stuff like that. No doubt.
Yeah.
Because it got to the point where I remember getting to the second team and I reached my peak in terms of I can't physically play with these
players. Yeah.
I ended up getting 3 bulging discs in my neck because when it came to scrum time, these players were just better athletes. They weren't more skillful, but I just couldn't physically deal with it because I'm 5'8", 5'9", on a good day.
Yeah, and likewise, I've played against wingers when playing fullback and they're so rapid. And I've looked at them and gone, how can you be that quick and that shit? Like, in the nicest way possible, how can you be so athletic and not know how to use your athleticism? And I find that really interesting as well. Like,
it's probably because like they've just been athletic all their life, so they've never really had to figure out ways about spacing. How am I going to find opportunities to make a pass here and then? Because that's where you get people that are really shit at sports. They're unathletic and they've got no like hand-eye coordination.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, or like,
some people cannot catch a ball for the life of them. You throw them a tennis ball, they'll be flapping around.
Yeah, well, we were discussing this before actually. Like, I've played with a couple of people who have have got as high as playing Conference South, which to a non-football player doesn't sound like the best level, but you know, it's the sixth tier in the whole country.
Look, if you've played any brand of football, you played five-a-side football. You know there's a difference between someone that's, I don't give a fuck what level you're at, who's been playing since they was a child, versus someone that's just like having a kick about 15, 16. Someone that can do kick-ups like all day if no one's touching them, but you put them on a pitch and no good, versus someone who can't even kick a ball more than five times.
These people that I'm talking about, this one person in particular I'm thinking about, you see him play football and he's mustard, he's pacey, he can go past people. I'm not going to name him because it's harsh, but you put any other sort of, any other, like he can't make a dart hit the dartboard. Like he'll throw a dart and it'll slap against the board and and hit the floor. You put a tennis racket in his hand and he misses the ball. But he's so good at football, you think, how can you be so talented at one type of sport? And then, I'll give you an example. Someone like Ben Stokes, you can imagine he'd be quite good at any sport.
Throw a basketball, he'd be a shooter.
Give him an NFL ball, he'd be zipping it about.
Yeah, racket.
But then there's these other people who are they excel at one sort of sport, and then you give them another.
Rory, I'm telling you, if I played sports from a child, I would have been a star. I promise you. Look, I can pick up anything. When it comes to sport, if I can catch a ball, I can shoot a basketball. I've said this to you before. Like, you're good at football and you're good at darts. You're not really good at anything else. You lose every fucking game.
I have a losing record to him again at Paul. That is like, it stretches back. I'm going to say months, but it could even be years now.
I'm a very good ball player.
I don't know. He's always one ball ahead. I don't know. I think if I practiced, I'd batter you. If I practiced, I'd batter you.
That's what I'm saying. If we both practice, I'd batter you. But what we're saying is, if someone put us in a box in a room like the Cube, for instance.
I reckon I'd be bad at the Cube. Unless I had a drink to settle my nerves, I'd be bad in the Cube.
If I went in the Cube, big time players make big time plays. That's all I'm saying.
I cannot argue with that. We need a tiebreak. We need to play tennis or something. Although I just feel like my mobility in tennis would undo you in tennis. I just can't see you getting side to side.
I will stand in one spot and I would beat you at tennis.
So next time, I don't know what happened there. Next time, maybe within the next few weeks before the end of summer, we'll book a tennis court for an hour.
The thing is, I've got a bad knee.
Okay, next year. By next year, that's our target.
Although I did say I'd spend a sporting triathlon where we play
and we take out our sports. So we take out football, we take out Paul, we take out rugby, obviously, because I'd be dead. And we'll play, say, like tennis, and then maybe we'll play. Are you any good at golf? Because I'm shit at golf.
I'm not great.
We'll go to a pitching park. I can chip and putt.
You pick any five. Whatever. This is what the game is right now. I'm telling you, outside of the sport that we've practiced, you roll up anything that we're not any good at, and I'm telling you.
All right. We'll go to the nets and play. Actually, that's too expensive for all the equipment. We'll go tennis. I was going to say, I'll buy. Yeah, I played. So this is funny, actually. I played cricket when I was, like, last 2 years of primary school and first 2 years of secondary school, and I played for a team called Winchmore Hill, like a local team, and basically, like, I went along because my dad was like, and my mum were like, you know, in the winter you play football, in the summer you play cricket, and I went along, and the guy, Bob his name was, who ran it, he was involved in a youth football.
We did say before the pod.
Oh, no, but I mean, I don't even remember his last name. But anyway, he was involved in the kids' football and he was involved in the kids' cricket, like in the local area. And he knew the team I played for and he knew that I was a half-decent player. So he puts me in the first team for Winchmore Hill, my first game, one of my first games. And he, for some reason, puts me into bat at like four, right? And
which, for those that don't know, I guess
four's a batsman. It's a specialist Peterson would bat at 4, 5, and 6. Like four's a good batsman. Bear in mind, I have to caveat this by saying I'm shit at cricket. First game, like, maybe I get a couple of runs or something. I think this is all right. Then we go over to somewhere like Harrow, somewhere in West London. We're playing against his team. It was after school. He puts me in at like 3 or 4. And there was this little Indian kid who's bowling against me. And like chubby Indian kid as well. I knew I was in trouble.
I was gonna say, like, there's certain sports when a certain guy rocks up from certain nations.
We are like, right.
Come up to a table tennis tournament. You see like a little.
This is how you know. This is how you know.
I'm about to get handed.
You know he's good as well because he's got his whole family. He's got like three generations of his family watching him on the sideline, right?
All 5 foot three.
Little chubby Indian kid, and I remember standing there. And this is in them days. You didn't even have to wear a helmet. We're only talking like 20 years ago. But you didn't even.
Well, there's no. To be fair, there's no need to put a helmet on when you are a helmet.
Yeah, you didn't even like. You didn't even need to wear a helmet. And I remember thinking, like, just being Indian, it's all right. He's probably a spinner. Right, he's probably a spinner, so he'll get me out with him.
But he's a fat kid, yeah, so he's not running.
He'll get me out with him three balls, but at least I might leave with my head. So anyway, I've seen him take the ball, and I've seen him go for his run-up, and his run-up's about 30 yards, and I'm like, oh, fucking hell, he's a fast bowler. First ball, he's bounced it up, it zipped past my head. And at that moment, I remember looking over to my dad. My dad's got this big grin on his face, like, he's in trouble. I remember thinking, just please get me out of the next ball, because he's going to kill me. If one of these hits me, he's going to kill me. Second ball comes in, and I don't even see it. I see the ball pitch. It disappears behind me, and I just think, crack. Like the wicket's just breaking. I look behind. The stumps are like, one stump's bent in half. The bales are flown up in the air, and I was like, oh, thank God for that. And I think after that day, I think I was demoted to like the third team and then stayed there. So I have played cricket, but I'm not very good. But they assume when you're kids, if you're good at one sport, you're going to be good at another sport. But yeah, that was like, there is nothing more scary. It's why I rate Piers Morgan for letting. So Piers Morgan used to gob off at Mitchell Johnson, who was an Australian fast bowler. Used to just jive at him on Twitter all day. And one day Mitchell Johnson says, come on in, come down to the nets. And Piers Morgan pads himself up, puts a helmet on. Might have been Mitchell Johnson, it might have been Glenn McGrath actually. One of them, it was an Aussie fast bowler who literally just bullied him for six balls. Just was pitching him up by his chest, by his shoulder. I'd have put my bat down and gone, no, I'm done, mate. Like,
but that's the thing with sports like that, like baseball. It does not look that fast on screen.
Oh, it's rapid.
But it's I remember going to nets with some blokes I used to play rugby with, right? And they'd played for like when they were younger and stuff. And even that for me was like, whoa.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there's a difference. Like even people always say about Jimmy Anderson. Jimmy Anderson's a slow bowler, but he's still bowling it
slow to high level.
You know, slow if you're Virat Kohli or Steve Smith. But
exactly. Yeah.
He's a bowler who he relies more on placement and skill and accuracy, as opposed to being like a Mitchell Stark who literally just comes and just launches fucking bullets at you, and they were showing like the view from behind the stumps when Anderson was bowling. And they were like the difference between him and then like Wood, who plays for England, who's exceptionally fast. And the difference between a ball coming at 78 miles an hour and a ball coming at 94 miles an hour is ridiculous. Like,
do you think you've grown a great appreciation for cricket, like as time's gone by, because of things like football and money? And I don't know if cricket has been a sport that's been affected by cash. Is it something that's probably lower in quality? Is it in its prime? Because I feel like with sports, there must be a period before kind of the inception of money where it was just some, you know, it was postmen and plumbers who had to get special leave to go on tournaments, who was smoking and drinking during halftime, versus probably football now, where it's probably overly, it's too disassociated with why you love sports. Like not you, but just in general, because it's too commercialised. Where I don't know, there was a period where I love UFC,
right?
And I think UFC's kind of hit that bell curve where it had its peak a few years ago, where it was one of the best sports you could watch on TV. And now it's got so much money and it's been changed so much, it's turned into some kind of shit showbiz product. It's kind of like Conor McGregor kind of changed things for that. And I think he brought it up to its peak. He was the peak, I think, of UFC, where it was in terms of commercially. He took it through the stratosphere. And after that, because they were so focused on the commercial aspect of it, it just lost the things you loved about it as a straight up sport.
I agree with you. The thing with cricket is that the a cricket purist, bear in mind, I'm not a, I love cricket for what it is, but I'm a very much probably what you call a cat. Cricket is just a great sport to sit down and to dive into for 5 days. And then you get a week break and then you can dive into it for another 5 days. But I don't follow county cricket. I don't follow the IPL. But a cricket purist, like, you know, the 65-year-old man with a flat cap in Yorkshire who goes to every county game, will tell you that money's ruining cricket at the minute, because players are now going to the IPL, and which is the Indian Premier League for anyone who doesn't know, and they're throwing outrageous sums of money, and they're so interested in like scoring scoring 80 runs off 50 balls and trying to slog it every 5 minutes, that the actual art of cricket in an opening batsman that can hang around, that can bat all day and score 45 runs, are like Usman Khawaja, who plays for Australia. People will say he's boring because he'll sit in for 8 hours and score 55 runs. But that's the art of Test cricket. I love watching that.
Yeah.
And there'll be people that will tell you that money's ruining cricket because players are going off to play in the IPL. There's less Test matches than ever. They have this new thing called the 100 where they don't even do overs. And, you know, so sport across the board has been affected by money. I think the main difference between football, and you'll probably attest to this with rugby as well, is that football players seem so far removed from the average man in the street, whereas cricket players are still likable and sort of regular. Yeah, they earn great money, but you go for a pint with Joe Root. You go for a pint with, you know.
That's probably because they're allowed to. Like, yeah. There's a version of cricket where it becomes so elite and so high level where they're looking for those minute percentages that you need to. I mean, maybe not cricket because maybe it's not a sport that dictates you to be that high level athlete. You're not going to see someone who is an NFL type athlete play cricket. They'll play NFL.
Yeah. Like, and also like after the third test, whichever one, maybe the second test, the one that the Australians won, and they're interviewing. I think it was Mitchell Starc and somebody else. Mitchell Starc and Khawaja, maybe, they were interviewing. And they were like, and all your teammates are up there on the balcony. And they were on the balcony, all of them, and they were just having a few beers after the test match. Again, they probably had two or three... They were drinking Peroni. They probably had two or three bottles of Peroni. It's not going to hurt. But can you imagine Neymar doing his post-match interview with a bottle of San Miguel? Like, yeah, it's really good, really.
And you always know that they're not like footballers and that, and these high level athletes are non drinkers because when they win something and they've got a bottle of champagne, all they're doing is throwing it.
Same with F1, same with the F1 drivers. It's the same, it's maybe part of the reason. I mean, I'm not an F1 fan anyway, but it's maybe part of the reason I've always sort of never really taken an interest in F1 because they all just seem like just rich kids from different countries.
It's not a sport that we grew up with, yeah, because it's people that. The reason why I'm probably not into cricket and stuff like that is because where I grew up, it's pretty much just football.
Yeah, I mean, and also, can you imagine me and you at 13? Because our mums are quite similar. They're a similar age. They're both of that generation. Can you imagine us going home to our mums and going, I need you to buy me a go-kart because I'm going to Brands Hatch at the weekend and I'm gonna race in my go-kart. They'd be like...
I couldn't get my mum to buy me an ice cream
Knowing my mum, she'd have probably encouraged it. She'd have gone and taken a loan out against the value of her house. And
you do have a loving mum.
Be like, yeah, he's going to be the next Lewis Hamilton or whatever. But the thought of, like, people we knew and people we grew up with, we didn't have the opportunity to go kart because most F1 drivers start from karting, don't they? And then they go up through the ranks. Like Lando Norris, Jenson Button, like they're private school, you know, old money. Like,
but you, the interesting thing with that is because that isn't going to be a sport that you grew up in. But the only reason you would have an awareness is because as a brand and as a product, it is so much more far reaching. The problem with football, for me, from your perspective, is that like you are a purist and you've seen the development. Because the opposite argument to this detachment from the person that is in your local area and that sort of stuff is that their reach is much wider. It's a worldwide sport. The Premier League is a worldwide sport.
It's a global product.
Exactly. So maybe for you, because you've grew up in the areas where football is and your dad will take you around, but the Premier League or someone else would argue, well, you know, you've got so-and-so who lives in the middle of Minnesota, who's a big Arsenal fan. There's an Arsenal pub in the middle of Alaska. Do you know what I mean? There's a massive contingent.
Yeah, and I'm a hypocrite, by the way, because when I see... When I went... So my wife's American. When I went to spend Christmas with my wife's brother, he lives in Austin, Texas. We went to spend Christmas there, probably the Christmas before lockdown, so 2019, 2020. I was tweeting about, you know, is there anywhere I can watch the Arsenal game? And some guy messaged me on Twitter and was like, oh yeah, there's actually a Dallas Arsenal fans group, and they meet up in this English pub. Basically, it's not an English pub, it just serves Fosters. Meet up in this English pub and they sing Arsenal songs.
Do they do like shit food? Like they
pie and chips.
Yeah, we got some fish.
Yeah,
and bangers
and mash. And,
I love
anyway,
gravy.
I was just like,
gravy sauce.
Do you know what? I'm just not going to go and watch. I found it all a bit funny. But then.
They probably fucking love it.
Well, I thought that, but then I thought it's also 7 in the morning. Like to go over there at 7 in the morning, I'm not a morning person. More so than some people we know, but I'm definitely not a morning person. But I just thought it all seemed a bit comical to me. And then I thought, hang on a minute, like three times now, I do the exact same thing on a Sunday evening during the months of September and February. You'll find me sat in this very spot looking at that very TV that you can't see. And I'll be in my Viking shirt, or if I'm not in a Viking shirt, I have my Viking hat on. And I'll get wound up, and I'll get flustered, and I'll get stressed out watching 53 men who are 4,000 miles away in Minnesota or in Tampa Bay or in Indianapolis playing a game that I've never played in my life. And I do all of these things that I have probably criticised American fans.
Imagine, right, and after all these years, and every year you're saying, right, if Minnesota make it to the Super Bowl, we're fucking going.
I've said that to you before as well, and I've said it to every year.
They will never make the Super Bowl, so that will never happen. But in this fantasy world, yeah,
You have enough money, you have enough leave.
Fucking Kirk Cousins somehow manages to pull it out of his arsehole and gets to the Super Bowl. You go there.
And someone goes to it.
And as soon as you get there in your top, he spits on you. Because who the fuck are you?
Not even as extreme as that. I was in a bar in South Florida, and my missus' cousin was talking to a guy she knew because she worked in a bar in that area. And he was a big Lions fan. And she was like, oh, Rory, come over, because the Detroit Lions and the Minnesota Vikings are in the same division. He was like, oh, this geezer's a Lions fan. This guy's a Lions fan. They're in your division. Do you think you'll beat them this year? And I started talking to him, and after maybe like 5 minutes, he was like, oh, what do you know anyway? You're English. And I thought, do you know what? For the first time in my life, I know how an American football fan, an American soccer fan, must feel when they come over here to spend like probably $2,500-$3,000 coming over to London, which ain't a cheap city.
And what's that? To tell that story you said earlier about the away fan, the Arsenal away fans.
Oh my God. So this one, right? Listen, there was a huge... Hold on.
I just want to say we do not condone. No. We are not associated with these actions. It's something that he viewed on Twitter.
So basically, my family have got a season ticket to Arsenal, but there's a huge thing with Arsenal tickets at the minute. It's very hard to get tickets. The team are doing well. What is even harder to get is away tickets for the away end. And there was complaints about how are these tourists ending up in the away end with Arsenal at places like...
It's not racist to say. Like, I think one of the things with Arsenal fans and a lot of the kind of non... A lot of the foreign people, there are a lot of Asian people.
There are a lot of Asian people at Arsenal because a lot of Asian tourists come to London and they want to go to a football match, which there's nothing wrong with. I think what people have an issue with is that they're taking sort of tickets and spaces away from lifelong supporters who want to be in the stadium.
And for me, my personal opinion, to cut you off from that story, is that it's similar to these people that say that foreigners are coming over here taking our jobs.
Foreigners are coming over here taking our seats.
Yeah, when's the last time you applied for a
job? Yeah, exactly. So this game, it was a game last season.
Next they'll be complaining how expensive season tickets are, and that's why they're not buying them.
And this game, it was maybe like Southampton or something last... It was an away game. It's very hard. Arsenal have 45,000 season ticket holders, and the average away end in the Premier League probably holds 2,500. So even if a quarter of those 45,000 season ticket holders, so 11,000 of them, want to get a ticket, it's impossible because, you know, 11 doesn't go into 4.
And the thing is, with away fans as well, they're probably the most dedicated, hardened...
But also, they gatekeep as well. They're like, oh, you know, the amount of times I've heard, because I've been to a few away games, but probably a dozen in my life. You're like, oh, where was you at Sparta Prague last season? Or, you know, you didn't go to Salonika in the Europa League. And that's the thing.
As an Arsenal fan, like, I'd want to go to an away game, but I would not want to face that.
And in order to get the points to get the tickets for the Liverpools and the Evertons and the Chelseas, you have to do the, you know, Wigan away in the League Cup first round on a Tuesday night. You have to go to Prague in the, you know, do you remember when Arsenal finished fourth and they drew Udinese? They drew Udinese in the first qualifying round for the Champions League in the last week of August. And Udine, which is the city, only has one flight a week from London. So people having to fly to Milan, hire a car, and then drive across the whole north of Italy just to get to Udinese to watch this game.
I'm not doing that.
I'm definitely not doing that. But people did. There was probably 1,500 Arsenal fans. So anyway, cut back to this Southampton game. There is an Asian guy with his two kids sat in the away end. Someone snapped a picture of him and put it on Twitter and said, see what I mean about all these foreigners, how did he get tickets? And then about 5 minutes later, the tweet's gone viral, you know, like 1,500 retweets or something. And then someone's actually pointed out, actually, that geezer's from Stevenage, and he sits next to me in the North Bank every game. He's a genuine Arsenal fan, and you've now just put his face and his children's faces out on the internet.
What they call it? Doxing.
Yeah, is that what they call it? Yeah, doxing.
That's what the kids call it.
You've just put his face and his children's faces
with the lingo
out on the on Twitter, going, "Who sold him a ticket? He's not a fan. He is just an Asian guy who happens to live in Hertfordshire, so prime Arsenal territory, Stevenage, Hemel Hempstead, and he's gone to an Arsenal game, and now you've thrown it out there, and it just goes to show that." I just found the whole thing outrageous. I just remember it being absolutely outrageous.
I mean, it's look, we're not ones to get outraged about anything that's any real serious, but it is a ridiculous thing. I mean, because the thing about it is that I remember, you know, me as an Arsenal fan and not really having much relation to it, it's all really been on me. And, you know, I've had people criticising me for the amount of Arsenal games I've gone to. Like, I live in the area.
That you've not gone to enough?
I've not gone to enough.
How is someone, unless you know someone with a season ticket, it's really hard to go to Arsenal. We said this earlier.
It's been like that since my entire life.
Especially at Highbury.
So how was it? Like,
at Highbury, it was like, unless you had a season ticket or you knew someone with a season ticket, it was almost impossible to get a ticket.
But then even that, further to that, I didn't have anyone to take me. I didn't have anyone to invest their time for me to go, and like there has to be a middle ground where I like the fact that sports is worldwide.
Yeah,
I like the fact that we get the opportunity to. I love the NFL. Is there a bigger NBA basketball fan than me that you know?
Oh no, no, you're definitely the biggest NBA fan. Sorry, my phone's ringing, so I'm just holding it so the vibration doesn't.
That's all right.
Yeah, you're definitely the biggest NBA fan.
And we wouldn't have that opportunity if it wasn't for, you know, the capital, the finances, the money that makes
it bigger. The fact that Sky Sports pay however much every year to show it.
And the problem is that I think actually the onus is on the clubs and the players that are in the clubs. Because, yeah, fair enough, you can have this wide-reaching span of fans across the world, but you can't forget the people that fucking got you there in the first place, the people that invested in your football team for you to be as big as possible. Like, the people in your area, yeah, you need to invest more time.
I'd like to know how many Arsenal fans that are season ticket holders, out of the 45,000 season ticket holders, how many of them, first of all, how many of them live within 3 miles of the ground? Secondly, how many of them live within 15 miles of the ground? So that would encompass this area, you know, up to sort of like Chesant, Enfield, Epping, Barnet, sort of that 15-mile area around Arsenal, and then the actual immediate local community of Haringey, Islington, Camden. I'd like to know the demographics. I don't know if they would ever release it.
What do you think of, like, football fans? Because obviously, like, we know people, we all know fans that are fans of teams that are not from the city, right? The only thing we can really talk about, I think, is football fandom, because that's probably the one we understand the most. I'm sure NFL teams and NBA teams where it's inherited from their parents. But say you were just saying that thing about 15 miles away or whatever. You know, one of the problems of being an Arsenal fan would be the fact that you wouldn't be able to live close to that place for years and years and years. So you'd have to move. But then say you moved from London to another town.
Yeah, if we moved to Peterborough tomorrow, does that make us any less of a fan? Like, yeah.
No, but then your child all of a sudden becomes a Peterborough fan, or you move to Liverpool or whatever, and they become a Liverpool fan. It's like, at what point is it all right for, say, okay, this is an acceptable fandom to have? Because there are some that are unreasonable, mind you. I don't think you get to be a fan of any fucking team.
No.
Right? You get to pick one. I picked Dallas Cowboys. And I hate it. Fucking hate it. Yeah. Right? I'm so annoyed that I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan. But I love watching them. And I do invest in them. And I do like their players.
Once they win.
The reason I don't like it is because I feel like I've done it again, where I think Arsenal fans can be quite shit. I think Dallas fans are shit.
Yeah.
They're
I think the Vikings are.
I picked another one. That's
I think the Vikings are a little bit like their fans are a little bit shit as well. I don't know. Yeah. Do you know what it is? Like, I was just thinking as you were speaking.
But then I wouldn't want to be. Sorry, I wouldn't want to be like. I love Steph Curry, but
I'd hate to be a Golden State fan, because I just don't like. I don't like Northern California in general. Well, I don't mind Oakland, but I don't like San Francisco. Just the place in general.
Well, you do like
that. That's true. But what I was going to say is, while you were speaking, I was actually thinking, do you know what? How are we doing on time, by the way? Are we
maybe about five minutes.
I was actually thinking that three of my best mates, one supports Liverpool, two support Man United, but they do, I don't know if they do anymore, but I know that, for example, my mate supports Liverpool. He goes up there three or four times a season. He's supported Liverpool since he was a kid. Is there that much of a problem? And I used to, when we were younger,
and he travels,
he puts it, I mean, he goes up, and now he's got a little boy. he's now started taking his kid to Orient because it's his local team. It's five stops on the tube. So now, whether his little one grows up to be a Liverpool fan because that's who his dad supports, or whether he grows up to be an Orient fan because they're three stops on the tube away, if he grows up to Liverpool to support Liverpool, he'll get a load of grief for it. But if he grows up to be an Orient fan, everyone will go, good on you, you're an Orient fan.
Yeah.
And people moan about people. I used to give it to my mates about being United fans and living in London, but then nobody... I'll give you just a random example. If you live in Birmingham and you travel 120 miles every Saturday to watch Rochdale or to watch Oldham or one of the greater Manchester teams or Blackburn, no one's ever giving you shit. Everyone's going, do you know what? Fair play. But they're not their local team. So actually, a lot of it depends on the team you follow. If I was from North London and supported Fulham, no one would say anything. But if I was from North London and supported Chelsea, people might go, well, you've got no connection to West London. You've got no connection, you know.
And to be fair, I probably will.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely. I haven't really.
But like with your Vikings fandoms, right? Because you know, sometimes they give you shit about it because it's like you found them, and all of a sudden you're the biggest Vikings.
I love it. I was addicted from within. I'll tell you how quickly it happened. You took me to the Reds.
It was the
Redskins played the Bengals in London.
I probably watched NFL maybe I don't know four or five seasons before you did. Instantly,
so 2015. Now I probably do know more than you, to be fair.
Oh, it's not even close.
2015.
I like sports. I don't care about it as much.
Yeah.
As
Yeah. You like it. I view it as something I have to engulf myself in. You view it as entertainment.
I'll watch anything on TV.
We went to watch the Bengals against the Washington Redskins in London. And this was 2015, right? You had a spare ticket. I weren't even going to go. You text me like a week. A week before and was like, "Oh, I might have a spare ticket. Do you want to come?" And me being me, I was just like, "Yeah, you know, if it's a day out, like I'll go."
And back then it was like
relatively cheap as well. It was like £40 or something.
I remember
going to the game, and I'd not been with my missus long, and her saying like, "Oh my god, you're going to have such a good time. It's going to be so great." And I remember going to the game. Obviously, being out with the boys was fun. Having a few beers was fun. The fireworks and the cheerleaders and
they know how to put a show on.
And I enjoyed all of that. But ultimately, I left that game thinking, fucking no idea what any of that was. No idea what even happened there. And then that summer, we went to America. That winter, we went to America. And I found myself again surrounded by Americans talking about the NFL. And I thought...
That would happen in America.
I thought, for the first time in my life, I'm the guy who doesn't like sport. And I don't like how this feels. And I thought, I need...
Because you can't get involved, in the conversation.
And I thought, I need to work this out. I need to figure out what's going on. And then literally, pretty much from within a month of that, so 2015... I was a fanatic. I was every day at work. I'd Google, what's this rule mean? What are these positions? I wanted to know the positions, the history, the best players, the which teams had moved where, who were the Hall of Famers, just everything. I was just like obsessed for about 2 years of just finding out as much as I could. And then obviously it calmed down, and now it's like less new to me. But yeah, it's just how I and my mate who's, I say recently got in, my mate who's got in involved and become a fan within the last 3 or 4 years, he's exactly the same as me. He cannot just watch something as an observer. He has to either going to not pay any attention to it at all, or he's going to throw himself into it. And I just guess that's a personality thing.
My version of that was the NBA. When I was a teenager, I would go on NBA.com. That was like all I was doing was just investing my time in learning as much as I could about the sport. I'd watch it as much as I could. I went back. I've got favorite players I have just because of the history that I've read, like Larry Bird and those sort of things.
Yeah, because you like the Celtics, don't you? Like,
yeah. But then we've got people that will just read The Athletic, or they might just read like a couple articles or Twitter.
I feel like that might be
all of a sudden. But all of a sudden, it's like, for me, I don't know if I necessarily... You can tell when... It's like at work, it's like, when you ask certain people questions or they describe it, you can tell whether they've invested time in actually trying to understand it, or they're just reading this kind of...
And then regurgitating whatever they've read.
I've got absolutely nothing but love for your fandom for the Vikings, right? Because you love it, and you've invested your time in it. Yeah, you haven't grown up in it, but you've got fucking memorabilia, you've spent money, you've spent time...
One day when we do a Zoom version of this podcast, you'll see my memorabilia in the background.
Exactly. And
like, I've got a Randy Moss and an Adrian Peterson shirt framed on the wall. Like,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. But, like, proper, you know, we can talk about tennis, and I used to like watching tennis and stuff like that. But I wouldn't go around being like, oh, yeah, I'm the biggest fucking Federer fan watching that. You know, I just wouldn't, I wouldn't act like I know more than I know. And I wouldn't act like I'm a fan bigger than I am.
That's the thing.
I'm not outraged by
it. I always say, and I'm conscious of time, we've got like 2 minutes. I always say this.
Too good a
combo. There's only three, because I used to really, really like tennis. I used to watch all the pro tour events and everything. Yeah, around sort of 20, what got me into it was the first Federer Nadal final.
Not Sharapova.
No, although Sharapova is a pretty good reason to get into it. But I was before she started taking drugs. I just got engulfed it for about 18 months. I would stay up and watch like the Queens and the Cincinnati.
Roddick, Andy Roddick's like one of my favourite tennis players.
Massive serve on him. See, I love that era with like Federer, Nadal, Davidenko, Songa, Del Potro. When Del Potro beat Federer in the final of the US Open, and I stayed up to watch that till like 3 a.m. But then sort of like, I then went to uni, and I threw myself into football. I was then went from playing from one day a week to like playing all the time, and it just sort of my tennis fandom just sort of like
happens.
And also Federer stopped me in the time. I used to love watching Federer.
Yeah, it's usually players that get you into it, because like for me, I'd say conscious of the time. When I got into UFC, there was no one else I knew that was watching it. Right? And the reason I started watching it was because of a guy called Rich Franklin. And he looked like Ace Ventura. Right. And I used to love Jim Carrey. Yeah. Right? But he was the champion and he was the best. And then when other people started getting into UFC, once it was getting bigger, they'd try and talk to me like they knew what the fucking UFC was. And I'm just like, look. Like, just chill out. You don't know more than me. I know what I'm talking about here because I've been watching it for about 15 years at this point.
When did you, just out of interest, because I used to live in Magaluf, and one of the bars in Magaluf that we used to drink in just used to have UFC on the TV non-stop. This would have been 2009. Is that around the time you started watching it? Because I first became aware of it getting massive in probably 2015.
I remember watching it briefly on Bravo, right? And then I actually really don't like the blood sport element of it. So I remember seeing this picture of this guy called Evan Tanner, who I found out years later. And it was just this picture of him bloodied up. And I really didn't like it. And the reason why I like Rich Franklin was because he was the best athlete of his time. And he wasn't a fighter. He was a technician. I love technicians in sport. I love skill. I love talent. I love ability, right? I just don't love the blood sport element. I can appreciate... I could appreciate the ferociousness of it because when I got into rugby, I just appreciate the physical element. When I started watching it, I was just looking. It was around 2008.
Right. Okay. So you basically had like a seven, eight year head start on most people that watch it in this.
But I mean, again.
But then there's people that go on, like...
The funny thing about it is there was this promotion before it called Pride. Now, when you talk about UFC and MMA fighting,
just to sound cool, people will say, I've been watching UFC since the Pride days.
I've been watching MMA since the Pride days.
Right.
If someone says that to me,
they're a fucking liar.
Right?
Tell me about Pride. Because I'm honest. I watched UFC when it was about five, six, 7 years.
I'm not lying.
It's like them geezers when Liverpool sign like a player from the Dutch fourth division, and people go, "Yeah, I'm quite familiar with him. Yeah, he likes to play on the left. Lovely right foot on him." And you're like, "Hang on a minute, he's played for like, I don't know, he's played for like Utrecht, Feyenoord second team, and then he's had 4 games at PSV. How have you seen him?"
Or it's like saying, I mean, Red Star Belgrade. Great, won Europe. And you're like, well, that was 95.
No one was watching Red Star Belgrade.
No, but they've not been good for 30 years, right? They was good, do you know what I mean? It's like, you haven't caught up.
And back in them days, last thing on this, back in those days, you could only be able to watch one Champions League. Like, it wasn't like now where you had the red button and you can watch Roma play Olympiacos. You had one game on ITV on a Tuesday and a Wednesday, and it would usually be the English team. So it'd be Deportivo against Man United, and then it would be Liverpool against PSG, for example. PSG weren't good then. Probably Liverpool against Lyon.
But you'd have your two games.
So people go in, oh, do you know what? In the early 90s, Marseille were a really good team. Chances are people might have watched them in the final and the semi, but they hadn't watched every Marseille game in the group stage going through. So, yeah, I call bullshit on that. Should we do some ratings?
Yeah.
How are we going to do it? We're going to do one each.
So what we're going to, because we are football fans, and we're not going to do football, but just because we like it and we like ranking because we're fellas, we'll call it our five-a-sides, right? So we're basically just going to, we don't have to rank it, but we're just going to list our five of something or other, yeah? And then we'll let the fans decide who is just my mum and your
mum. We'll ask people to actually send us through.
What are we going to do? Like make a Twitter channel?
Yeah, I think we should do Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah, can you do that? You're a social media guy. You spend enough time on Twitter. And I'm very busy.
Yeah,
could you do our Twitter?
Yeah, I'll do the Twitter. You do the Instagram.
All right.
Let me just get my list up. So we'll ask people to listen. Even if we have 10 listeners, we'll ask people to ask us other things to do with Five Aside Team of. So this one, I believe, is our five most overrated food places.
Yes, five most overrated food places. And it could be ones that you like but aren't as good as they seem. Let's just get into it. We'll do one each.
We might have some that's overlapping. Yeah, we'll just go from there. Do you want to start?
I'll start. What I'll do is I'll give you the place and I'll give you two or three reasons why, and then you have like 30 seconds as a rebuttal, and then we go on to your ones.
This might be a bit too strong. No, I'm joking. Go ahead, yeah.
Right. So. My number one is Taco Bell, right? The reason I'm giving you is that if you like Taco Bell, Mexican stroke Central American food, and you're in America, there is a plethora of places where you can go and you can have home cooked tacos. I think you're being unfair, and you're missing the point. I have to give my reasons. Hold on, I've got to stop you right now. Thank you very much.
Because I'm just arguing.
This is why I said we should have times of rebuttal. Because we're going to end up now having a half an hour argument about Taco Bell. It's not Taco Bell.
It's the fact that like
we're not. Do your list.
Okay.
Also, if you eat it too late at night, it has that McDonald's effect where you feel like you've drunk 8 pints the morning after because it is so salty and it's so processed and you think, I don't know what was in that. But this is not just the tacos. This is the burritos. This is the drinks. This is the enchiladas. They are horrendous. And it's just not worth, the taste is not worth how it makes you feel afterwards.
That I agree with, right?
And actually, I really like Taco Bell, okay?
There is nothing deep fried and covered in cheese that he does not like. Yes, including your mum.
There is nothing that messes my insides more on a consistent basis than Taco Bell.
Really?
Oh my god, I could get their salad and I will be running ragged for two days.
I do not know what they do to their stuff, but my god, I cannot order a thing.
But the thing is, there were times when I'm sitting indoors, right, and I've had a smoke and I'm fucking high as anything.
Are you in the delivery range of Taco Bell?
Yeah, I've got one down Holloway Road.
I weren't aware of that.
And it's only new in the last couple of years because I remember years ago going to America and getting it and thinking this is rubbish. Tastes like shit.
Now I don't know if it's because it's translated here and it's slightly different. I think it's fucking tasty.
I think Taco Bell's really good. But it really demolishes. Now where I'm going to go back to what I was saying in terms of your list, because the rest of it's going to be longer. I don't want you to change it.
I want to win.
We're not comparing places like this to the Michelin star. What are you doing? That's like saying McDonald's is overrated because it's not the best burger place on the planet.
McDonald's is what it is, though. This is what I mean. McDonald's is never in any way, shape, or form going to be overrated. No, because most people aren't.
It's going to be properly or underrated at best.
Right, go on, your one.
So my first one,
and only because this is you, and you brought me to this one.
You said it before.
Everyone thinks, because the thing about me, I am, well, the first one is wings. I knew he was going to say that. Now, if you know me, I am very synonymous with chicken wings. Everyone who knows me knows that I love wings. Exactly. Everyone that knows me knows that I love two things in life more than anything. Now three with my girlfriend, but mainly two, which is my mum. and chicken wings. There was a period in my life where I couldn't walk past a fried chicken shop and one that didn't try and not get four wings for a pound because that's what they all want.
Wingstop.
I mean, he's going to mention the price.
Not even the price. Don't get me started. Right?
Do you remember that time?
Do you remember that time we went to Wingstop down in?
Because you mentioned it at least once a month. We went to the. Was it Coney Island?
Those children.
The servers.
Those little youths.
Running things.
Coming barely.
Waited 45 minutes for our wings.
And he gave me attitude.
And then, what did he say to you?
Calm down. Didn't he say something like,
your chips are ready and your wings weren't? He was like, just eat the chips first. The wings will be here in a minute.
This 16, 15 year old dickhead with some braids, boy. Fucking A.
He's like, why is he talking to me like he's my mate? He was like, calm down, your chicken will be here in a minute, big man.
Do you know what I mean?
The food was fucking late, right? But then, a few people have done this to me, right? They go, Chris likes chicken wings. I'm going to take him here.
Those wings are just horrible.
There's not one good thing about them. They don't taste good. The sauce is terrible. And the reason they're overrated is because if you walk by one in central London, the fucking queue's rammed.
Listen to the chicken. My rebuttal, it'll be quick. Everything he said is correct. But in terms of quality of wing, it's the only place I've found. And we're not talking about breaded wings here from a chicken shop. We're talking about like wings with a sauce. In terms of like wings in the UK, it's the closest to American standard I've managed to find.
Nah, man. I've been to some places that have done some good.
Show me, and I'll maybe agree with you.
There's this place called Ninth Ward, near Farringdon.
Outstanding. We can eat wings on a Tuesday.
We should do it, definitely.
So, my next one, Burger King. Burger King, they started off in the 90s when fast food became like a massive thingy. You had like McDonald's, Wimpy, KFC, Burger King, and they all did what they said on the tin. They're all like, right, in McDonald's you get a burger and chips. In KFC you get chicken wings and chips, or chicken on the bone and chips. Burger King you get chicken and chips. Since then, every single one of them has diversified and you can get other things. Burger King has not. You walk into Burger King, you can still pretty much get a burger and chips.
It's like going back to the 90s. I mean, they've still got the
same. It might as well be Wimpy. Yeah. It's just that bad. It's boring. And the burgers are actually quite good, but you're not getting anything else. And eventually it's going to get overtaken by Five Guys. A little bit like how Pizza Hut used to be your go-to pizza, and it's now been overtaken by Domino's and Papa John's.
The only thing I'd say with that, because I'm on the same wavelength, but the only thing I'll question is, does anyone really rate Burger King?
There's been times where we've been like, right, let's get a takeaway here.
She picked you, exactly.
But there's been times where we've been like, let's get a takeaway, and I mean like curry kebab, Chinese.
She goes, should we get a Burger King? I've got a lot of time for Burger King, right? If on a random occasion I can roll up to a Burger King. Do you know what? Fancy a Burger King. Get a double bacon cheeseburger, whatever that big one is, the double XL. I like their fries. Other than that, they've not really got much on offer that I like, but occasionally it slaps. There's absolutely no fucking way. And it's so expensive.
Yeah, for what it is. Oh my God, that's our first agreement. Right, what's your second?
Well, I don't know if I agree, but... My next one is another chicken-related, Morley's.
I've never had Morley's, so I can't...
I don't know what happened, right?
So Morley's, I feel like, is relatively new in the London scene. I think it started in South London and kind of worked its way around.
Straight away, that's a red flag.
South London, anything that starts in South London.
But everyone, I feel like people just be like, oh, Morley's.
I tried it, and not only was it not good, it was actually inedible.
Is it like a burger? It's a fried chicken. So is it a KFC or favourite chicken? That sort of. Right.
It's kind of like somewhere between a KFC and a chicken.
I didn't know whether you were talking like more like a restaurant sort of place or... No.
None of these are restaurant places.
Maybe one. I'll give you that. Tell us in the comments, by the way, if you like Morley's or not, or if you've experienced it, because I've got no experience.
Chances are there'll be a road man with a puffy jacket.
Yeah, that's true. So my next one is a bit controversial, and it mainly applies to anyone who, when they're out in central London, has to get the train or tube home from Liverpool Street. Okay, and it is the Cornish pasty company. Outside Liverpool Street Station. This thing has been there for years, right?
That's hilarious.
Usually you go to it when KFC's shut. That's opposite Liverpool Street.
and the McDonald's is too rammed, so you think, I'm just going to grab a pasty. You also get them at service stations, right?
Yeah, I know a Cornish pasty.
Also get them at service, right? They're always too hot. I have never eaten a Cornish pasty from that place and not ended up with a burnt mouth. I'm not even talking, about a burnt mouth for the next hour. I'm talking about injuries for the next 2-3 days.
Skin falling off your mouth, getting slightly infected because
you cannot eat a proper meal for like 2 days afterwards because the potato in these meat and potato pasties have burnt the roof of your mouth. They're never good. The edges are too crusty and they're like a health and safety risk.
I've got to tell you this, Roy. The mic.
Right. Man, sorry. It's because I'm passionate.
About potato, hot potato.
Yeah, I just don't want to sound like that. It sounds a bit creepy, so I'm keeping it distance, but I'll get better. So the pastry at the edge is too dry. The filling's too hot, and it's just it's just not having it.
Couldn't agree with you more. That is so funny that because there's so many we'd have picked, and that's such a funny one because it's one of those ones where you get to a train station. Say you're going
what is a train
late, and the thing is, and the problem is that like, all right, I've got there too late. The queue for McDonald's and Burger King is too long. So I've got options here. I've got Upper Crust. I've got Cornish pasty fucking thing. I've got some places I don't even know. But there's no queue, so I'm like, should I even go?
You always do. You're like £5 for a pasty, that's a bargain. It's probably more now.
Yeah, and you're like, why is this Mexican place got a bacon sandwich in the morning? And then you open it, and you're like, and then the same thing with a Cornish pasty place. But and the disappointing thing about it is, I love Cornish pasty.
I do. A good one from Devon or Cornwall. Absolutely slaps. But yeah, the Cornish pasty place.
I'm with you. Right, my next one, right? German doner kebab.
I know you said that earlier,
and I'd already written on my list when you'd said it.
Tell them the Glasgow story.
It's not even a story though. The thing is, we went on a stag do up in Glasgow.
Great city, by the way.
We'd been drinking all day. We hadn't really had a structured day when it comes to eating. The stag had unfortunately
seen better days. He had to be removed from the proceedings.
We needed some tactical meals for everyone.
Tactical other things as well. He was in a bad way.
But so we go to this German doner kebab, and it's relatively empty, and it's got almost like two sides, and they must have just prioritised a fucking delivery section because we waited fucking.
There was like 10 of us. We all ordered the same thing. Like there was usually like 10 doner kebabs. It weren't like we had like vegetarian. Well, we might have had one vegetarian or something, but it weren't even complex. It was like 10 large doners, please, mate.
Well, it's a kebab. You fucking just get it off the spit and then put it in my pizza. Bit of salad.
We were in there for over an hour and a half. It was so long. And some people had finished eating and other people hadn't even got their food.
And the thing about it is they had about 17 staff.
So one person serving and about 20 people in the back. It was mad.
Now the thing about it is, German doner kebab is actually a really nice kebab. The reason it's underrated is because portions are small, it's overpriced, and generally it's fucking slow. If German doner kebab upped something, whether it's speed, the value or the amount, it wouldn't be in that list.
I love a kebab as well. What I will say though is that our standards for kebabs, being from where we're from, are probably a lot higher than the average person.
I've been to Turkey and Greece. They don't do it like London.
But also,
I used to have a manager. He's Turkish. When I used to work in a library, Janae, shout out Janae, best manager ever had. Taught me a lot. No, I'm joking. But he even said, You don't get kebabs in Turkey. No, they are German.
You can't get even in Greece. Like that North London. You don't go to Barnet and get a good kebab. It's that corridor of the A10 where it starts in Islington, goes Islington, Haringey, Enfield, Tottenham, up to Chesham, and maybe a little bit further out to Hoddesdon, is where all the Turkish people in London live within 3 miles either side of that A10. And that's where you get a kebab. And even in South London, you don't get the same kebab. So I'm not going to rebuke at all. I think that's a great shout. My fourth one is a controversial one. Nando's. Right? And not because I don't like Nando's, I do like Nando's. It's very edible, it's nice to grab before you go to the... No, if you go to the cinema or something, it's nice. If you've been out shopping in a town centre, you know what you're going to get. It's very nice. I just feel like it's overrated. I feel like there was a 10-year period where everybody was so big on Nando's, and it's a nice enough meal, but no one ever wants to go there for their birthday. No one ever wants to go there.
Well, no one above 17.
You go there just to grab a bit of food before a film or when you've been shopping for the day or something like that. Or you're in Brent Cross. Like, other than that, it's overrated just because people put it on a pedestal. Like, I'm not saying it's bad, but people put it on a pedestal.
See, I think it's not overrated, it's not underrated. It can be overrated at times, but it's probably where it needs to be. Like, it's not overrated. I've always got time for Nando's. It's you're always gonna get what you're gonna get. Sometimes maybe a little bit of bad service. I went last week.
Had a bit of an incident
with their ticketing system, and it didn't come back, and the feeder was cold, but
Nando's is Nando's.
I like it. I've got a lot of time for it. I don't know.
I'm going to do my last one because it's the same as your last one as well, and then let you do yours. My last one's German Doner Kebab. We don't need to go there again, purely because of the Glasgow incident. I'm not having it. So over to you for your last ones.
Well, so my second one last is Pizza Hut.
I almost put
Domino's, but
I used to love Domino's.
I shouldn't put Domino's. I'm going to change Domino's. It. Domino's. Because I thought he was going to push back straight on Domino's.
I've got a mate who we've had this discussion, and he calls them the Big Three. He goes, you know, out of the Big Three. And automatically, everyone listening has to know that the Big Three is Domino's, Pizza Hut, and Papa John's. But, yeah, just carry on. Because my rating of the Big Three changes, but Papa John's is always at the bottom. But probably
Domino's is at the top. But overall, I think Domino's set maybe similar to your Nando's thing. Had a time. I think there was a period where it was just the rage.
Our uni years. Domino's was massive.
If we say I'm here long enough tonight, right, and we order pizza, I would much rather try some random know-nothing on Uber Eats pizza place.
Remember the one we had when I was about to name, we said no name, but when me, you and Mark were watching the Champions League final,
but that's fine.
We got a pizza. I can't even remember where it was from because I was half cut with me.
It was like one of them,
USA pizza or something like that. But it was really good, and it only cost about 15 quid, and it fed three above average size geezers.
Exactly, and I think with Domino's, it's just maybe if it hasn't evolved. I think it's gotten worse. The wings are good,
but expensive. Like $8.99 for like five. Yeah, weeks. Yeah.
The sides are going to take you to the moon. Unless you're going to go collect, there really is no point.
Yeah, no pushback from me. I probably still order Domino's.
I thought you might. No, to be fair.
I still order Domino's. I order Domino's.
Take the pizza.
My missus. A lot of it depends on who you're eating with, and my missus is one of them people. It's no good. She likes to order something different every time she eats, whereas I have my go-to order. So, Domino's is easy because I would literally say to my missus, shall we get the meaty one and the veggie hot one, which are the two that we like? And that's what we get. And it's just for simplicity. Because I know that if we go too far off the beaten track with my missus, we'll end up looking at like, oh, look, there's a new Greek gyro place that's opened in Enfield. And they do this, this, and this, and then I'll end up getting a shit dinner. Like, she orders sushi on Uber Eats and then wonders why it's shit. From Enfield as well, sushi from Enfield. So that's the reason. But no, not too much pushback for me. What's your last one?
The last one is Pret. Now, the reason is, I think if you work in the city long enough, and you might experience this now that you're...
Well, I worked in the city, then went to not work in the city, now I'm working back in the city.
So you might have an understanding, but too many times colleagues have been like, I'm going to go Pret for lunch.
You're like, do you bring your credit card?
Why?
Do you bring your credit card?
Yeah. Why? Why?
Yeah, I don't get it.
What are you talking about?
They don't even do a meal deal.
And honestly, I get, because obviously I don't eat breakfast when I go into the office. So you come in, you go into Pret, the nearest place is Pret, so I get my coffee from Pret in the morning as well. And it's like 4:30 for like a cappuccino with a shot of caramel.
And then all of a sudden you're going to go eat yourself a tuna crunch sandwich, and then that's £11.
Yeah, honestly, I once got a yogurt, a bag of crisps, and a tuna crunch baguette, or like a ploughman's baguette or something, and it comes at over 12 quid.
It's similar to all of them. It's pasta.
Pret's the worst.
But they're all the same in fucking shit. Coffee shops. And the thing is, maybe you get your coffee in the morning and a bit of breakfast, but why would you go there for lunch?
Just convenience. It's because they're everywhere. So I'll give you an example.
They shouldn't be everywhere. They're
I work at Euston, right? There's one in Euston Station, like as in. As you walk out of Euston Station, there's one there, and there's also, my office is about two blocks away, and there's one on the corner there as well. So in the 5-minute walk from Euston to my work, I have to pass two Pret's. If I'm a bit tired, I'm going to go in one of them for a coffee. And if I can't be bothered to walk at lunchtime, I'm going to go in there at lunch and go, do you know what, I know it's a rip-off, but I just want to get back to my desk and sit there and chill for a bit.
But you're not going to be happy.
Never. Never.
Not gonna.
So you got any honourable mentions?
Yeah, I've got a couple here. I mean, it's funny. We can list. I actually put Domino's. I put Pizza Hut in it.
KFC.
I love KFC.
I mean, KFC used to be my one. What's happened to it lately is just.
I love KFC, man. I love it.
Even now,
probably once every 2 weeks, I get a KFC. Sometimes I just feel it's one of the very few takeaways that I crave.
In my new work recently for lunch, like one of the guys off his credit card will get like a bucket. I've always got time for a bucket because the pieces at the bottom, my goodness.
Yeah.
The grease trappers. Love it.
Prezzo?
Oh, Prezzo's not that. Oh, maybe I'm confusing it with Pizza Express. Yeah. It's pretty much the same.
Pizza Express is just
It's pretty much the same thing.
Prezzo, I could even put Pizza Express, to be honest. My last one is Leon.
Yeah, I won't argue that too much either. Leon's overrated.
I used to work.
Then you order on the machine now, and it's always something weird, like some rice with an egg on it.
I don't even know, man. They just lost their way. I was there within their first years of being a company, and they were all right, but they're run by fucking pieces of shit. They're not as healthy as they sound, by the way. I'm letting you know that right now. We almost got closed down because we had rat infestations. That's a piece of shit company, and I just hate them with a passion.
I'm not going to push back too much on any of them other than KFC. My honourable mentions.
You ain't even written it down.
No, I've looked. I've closed it. I've written it down. My honourable mentions are. Any Mexican in London, it's never going to compare to being in America. Any Mexican in London is one of them. Another one, Itsu. It's like a sushi place that you only get them in central London. They charge you restaurant prices. And if you're going to pay money for sushi, go to, as my dog joins us, you might as well go to a, if you want sushi. Now, I don't understand people that want sushi anyway. I've never craved sushi in my life.
Sushi is one of the best things you could have. No, it's good.
I think it's overrated at the best of times, but to pay fast food sushi is next level. Like, if you actually want sushi, go and have good sushi. Go and pay.
No, because the thing is, right, for lunchtime and quick ones, Itsu is excellent, actually. It's excellent. It tastes so good. It's slightly overpriced. But if you go there at the end, it's half price.
That's another thing. They're knocking out. Like, cause I used to, when I worked in Holborn, I used to sometimes have to work till 8-9, and you come out, and people that were working late would be like, "Quick, let's get to Itsu." They shut at 9:30, and you know, they give stuff away, and I'll just be like, "Come on now." One of them weird chains that I don't really, other than you, I don't know anyone that eats in, but they still manage to keep going. So people must be using them, but. Yeah.
I like it. I couldn't disagree more.
Yeah.
But that's like saying Five Guys.
Yeah, Five Guys. We had
Five Guys is really, really good if it was £5 cheaper.
I could not agree with you more. Their milkshakes are incredible. But
their burgers are great. Their fries are great.
£7 for a milkshake. Yeah. It's just outrageous. Like, it's,
but if you're going for lunch and you're spending £18, no bueno.
No bueno.
Yeah.
All right. First episode.
We should just finish up
books,
now.
First episode.
Yeah, we're calling that one. Number one. Welcome to Chris and Rory. A work in regress.
We should have said that at the start as well.
Nah, it's fine. We don't even need to introduce it. It's not a proper show.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to like and subscribe.
Follow us on Twitter because Rory's going to make a nice Twitter channel for us. He's going to be.
We'll let you know the app on the next episode, or maybe the one after that, because we might record another one later.
Yeah.
All right. Sweet.
Cheers. Bye.